Army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Hi, and good morning. I'm Sharon Lurie. Welcome to the Cooking Corner. And I've got quite a few exciting things to share with you. Quite a few exciting things coming up this week. Of course, the big one being the Shabbos Project. So, this Thursday night is the great big challah bake at the Norwood Mall, on the roof of the Norwood Mall. And there is just such a vibe, and it is just so exciting. And I mean, for those of you who make the own challah every Friday night, doesn't matter. There is nothing that beats getting together at this great big challah bake, which will take place at 5:30. As I said, on top of the Norwood Mall, the rooftop, and we're in for some fun and exciting guests and fun and exciting times together. So book online and get ready for a very special night. Now, last Wednesday, I actually have to mention this. I went to the Deer Link evening where, you know, sponsors and volunteers and warriors are all invited to an evening. And this was actually organized and coordinated with through Michelle Goodman, who is our DL Link lady. And she is the most incredible woman who's done the most incredible work. And they've just purchased a beautiful new, well, it's going to be a beautiful wellness spa. And so we all got together on Wednesday night, and it was sponsored actually by Riva of Riva Flex Catering, and it was at the Savoy, and she did it in honor of her late mom. And it was a very, very special evening. I have never seen such wonderful food. The trays and tables of sushi, the beautiful containers that they presented it all in. You all got your own little bowls that you could put all your sushi and whatever you wanted. I mean, that to me, I thought that was the evening. Until they said, okay, we're going to break for dinner. Break for dinner. You've never seen such beautiful food. They had hoppy bun rice sandwiches. They had stir fry. They had, whatever you can think of, shawarmas and vegetable options and the most beautiful salads. I mean, just these huge platters and these huge tables of just food. And then you are presented at your table, you know, during the evening with a lovely platter of, I always call them the Meryl platters, as you know, because it's nougat and dried fruit and beautiful sorbets and in little shot glasses. I mean, it was just an incredible evening. And I just have to say that I am so proud to be part of this amazing community. We have an exceptional community and we do exceptional work. And just listening to the people, you know, people talking and warriors talking, and I'm blown away for words. So well done to Michelle and to everybody and to all the amazing people that help the DL Link. I must say, don't forget, listen to their show on a Thursday from 12 to 1. It's just inspiring. So it's actually been an amazing week of books. All of a sudden, just about four books landed on my desk. And one that in particular that I love, because I had the first book, is the new book of Simply Zola, Zola Nene. And she actually graduated from the Institute of Culinary Arts in Stellenbosch and was appointed catering manager for a large catering company in Johannesburg. Then she joined the Espresso Morning Show on SABC3 when it was launched in 2010 and was a resident chef until, I think it was late 2017. And since winning Best in the World in her category at the Gourmand Cookbook Awards for Simply Delicious, Her profile as a food stylist and TV personality has soared, not least being her role as a judge on the Great South African Bake Off. I mean, she has just come leaps and bounds, and it actually gives me great pleasure to share a wonderful recipe of hers from her new book, which is entitled Simply Zola, The Journey Continues. And as she says, her quote is, "My food journey is ever evolving, and this book is a continuation of my life journey told through food." So she had a lovely pulled a lamb recipe for pulled lamb, and which is always such a lovely dish to make, because if it doesn't work, like if you're doing a brisket and you overcook it, well, just call it pulled brisket. If you overcook a lamb shoulder, turn it into pulled lamb. It's just delicious. So it's great for feeding a crowd, because you can stir it into pasta, serve it on rolls, serve it in tacos, wraps. I mean, the options are endless. And what I love most about it is that it only takes a few minutes of preparation. It's long, slow cooking, and that's when all the magic happens. But, you know, just the beginning, just throwing it all together, putting on a double layer of tin foil and sticking it in the oven for just to cook low and slow is just the way to go. So you will need, for this wonderful pulled shoulder of lamb, 15 mils of ground cumin. So that's a tablespoon. 15 mils of ground coriander. This is all ground spice. Okay, so that's a tablespoon of ground cumin, tablespoon of ground coriander, a 2 kilo shoulder of lamb. You can have it on the bone, or if you want, you can have it, you know, rolled or just as deboned shoulder. You will also need 5 spring onions chopped, 3 centimeter piece of fresh ginger sliced, 4 large cloves of garlic peeled, 1 green chili, nice hot chili, 60 mils of brown sugar, so that would be 4 tablespoons of brown sugar, 500 mils, 2 cups of apple juice, 250 mils of water, 30 mils of olive oil, salt and pepper. And then all you do is you preheat the oven to 160. You mix it together, mix the cumin, the coriander, and you rub it all over the shoulder, and you transfer the meat to a roasting dish, and you add the spring onions, the ginger, the garlic, the chili, the sugar, the apple juice, and the water, and you drizzle it with the olive oil and season to taste. Season with salt and pepper. And you roast it in the oven uncovered for 4 hours. And then what I did was, because it had to go a little longer for Shabbos, I let it go on in the oven covered for about an hour or two. So that's it. Beautiful pulled shoulder of lamb. If you want to, I know a lot of people like extra garlic. You can add a bit more garlic. I know that some people like to add a little bit of rosemary to their lamb. You can do that. You know, it's all about what your mouth craves. So after the break, I'll come back to you with a little bit on another book and a lovely interview that I had with Kobus Buiter of Le Braai with a bit of Je ne sais quoi.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife. And as I said to you before we went to the ad break and the song, I said that we were going to be doing an interview with Kobus Buiter of Le Braai. Braai with a bit of Je ne sais quoi. Now, what I love about this book, is because you all know how much I love braaiing. And there's nothing better than a person who loves braaiing getting tips from other people who braai. I know everybody always says, oh, it's all about the equipment, it's all about the gas, it's all about the charcoal, it's all about the wood, whatever. Everybody has their different feelings on brying. But as you know, I even stick my whole roast in before Shabbos, and then I let it cook in the oven for the rest of the time. But before we go to Kurbis, and before I share some of his wonderful recipes with you, let's just share one more recipe. I'm trying to give you ideas for the Shabbos project, things to do for Friday night and things to do for Shabbos day. So we are going to do baked peri-peri chicken and onions. Okay, this is from Zola's new book, Simply Zola. And I did try to get her on the show, but unfortunately she is so hectically busy. She's running, between being a master of ceremonies for one function and doing the launch of her new book. It was just a little crazy and a little hectic. So I'm going to be sharing her recipe. So we'll need for the baked peri-peri chicken and onions. Okay. She says here, I'm always thinking of new ways to make chicken more exciting. Adding some spicy homemade peri-peri to it is a great way to add life to boring old chicken. Okay, so you will need for this 8 chicken thighs, bone in and skin on. Now, I know that a lot of people don't like thighs. They like prefer drumsticks or they prefer chicken breasts. But remember that if you're doing chicken breasts, don't cook it for as long. But this recipe calls for chicken thighs, bone in, and the skin must be on. 2 onions, cut into wedges. Okay, so you would cut it through the middle and then cut it into eighths. Okay, and then you separate the leaves, or you can just sort of leave it in little wedges. Salt and pepper. 4 spring onions finely chopped. Zest and juice of 1 lemon. I'm sure you've got lots of lemons on those lemon trees. Oh, mine are really blooming. 3 cloves of garlic, finely minced. 1 red chili, finely chopped. 10 mils, that's 2 teaspoons, cayenne pepper. 5 mils of paprika, so that's 1 teaspoon. 30 mils of tomato paste. Now remember, it's not tomato puree, it's tomato paste. Okay, we like the thicker version. And you'll also need 300 mils of tomato juice. Okay, so we're using tomato paste and tomato juice. And you'll need 125 mils, that's about half a cup of honey. Preheat your oven to 200. And you place the chicken portions and the onions in a roasting dish. Then you season to taste, a little bit of salt and pepper. And you mix together the spring onions, the lemon zest, lemon juice, garlic, chili, cayenne pepper, paprika, tomato paste, tomato juice, and honey. And you pour the sauce over the chicken. You roast for about an hour, turning every 20 minutes during roasting. And you serve that with roast potatoes or sweet potato wedges. You can get lovely sweet potato wedges. Or you can get regular potato wedges. And you stick that in as well to bake with the peri-peri. Now, you may find after making this once that you actually prefer a little bit more chili, which you can do. I mean, if you want to as well, buy a bottle of your favorite chili spice, chili sauce, and you can add that as well afterwards. I know that my family need to eat chilies neat, raw. Okay, now this is another recipe that I found. This is for a very special friend of mine at Shul, and he knows exactly who he is. And this is a bratwurst and butter bean stew. So I have to share this with you, because it is just so beautiful in flavor, and it is just so rich in beans, and well, it's South African, and why not have it on our South African Shabbos project evening? Why not? So, I love using bratwurst in stews, says Zola, because it has all the flavors built in. It's a great way to add flavor to dishes with minimal effort. And she's quite right. If you find a beautifully flavored bratwurst, you can actually serve it with rice. You can put it into a crock pot and do a layer of potatoes, a layer of boerewors, a layer of beans. Anyway, let me give you her recipe. So you'll need 30 mils of olive oil. So that's 2 tablespoons. 1 kilo of boerewors. 2 onions sliced. 30 mils of chopped fresh thyme. So that's 2 tablespoons. Chopped fresh thyme. 1 if you're using dried thyme. I think it's easier for us in kosher route using the dried thyme. 2 cloves of garlic crushed and a 400 gram can of cherry tomatoes. 15 mils of sugar. That's a tablespoon of sugar. 250 mils of chicken or beef stock. So what I would do is I'd put a tablespoon of either beef stock or chicken stock into a cup of boiling water, mix it together. You'll also need 60 mils of chopped fresh parsley. And you'll need one by 410 grams of a canned butter beans, my favorite, drained. 2 medium sweet potatoes, cut into chunks, salt and pepper. If you don't like sweet potato, then use ordinary potato. So you heat the olive oil in a large pot, and then you pinch bits of boerewors out of its casing, and you brown it in the oil. Okay? So you're actually pulling the meat out and sort of making it into little rounds, if you so to speak, or you can just have little, not 2-inch long, sorry, I'm showing my age, 5-centimeter-inch long little pieces of boerewors. But don't forget, you must squeeze it out of the skin. And to the same pot, you add the onions, thyme, and garlic, and then you saute it until the onions have really softened, and then you add the tomatoes, sugar, and stock, and you bring it all to the boil. And you return the boerewors to the pot. Oh, sorry. Once you have fried the boerewors out of its casing, okay, you remove the brown sausage. You don't want to overcook the boerewors. Okay, and just set that boerewors aside. And then you return the boerewors to the pot, stir in the parsley, beans, and sweet potatoes. And then you simmer it for about 15 minutes until the sweet potatoes are cooked through, soft. And there you have beautiful boerewors and butter bean stew. And don't be frightened to put boerewors into, but uncooked, obviously. You can brown it a bit first, but cook it in in your chollin pot. It's so delicious. Okay, so now we are going to go to an ad break. And when we come back, we are going to go to Kobus Buerta. And we are going to learn the secrets of the celebrated chef who conquered France one braai at a time.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife. And as I said to you before, we went to the ad break and the song, said that we were going to be doing an interview with Kobus Buerta of Le Braai. Braai with a bit of je ne sais quoi. Now,
So that's how I ended up in France. And then quickly I had 3 restaurants, had the barbecues built, I mean, for the first restaurant, some of the barbecues. Had 3 restaurants, got really sick of the restaurant business because it's really nice to start a restaurant, but then it becomes super boring because it's the same thing every day. And the barbecue stuff is just so nice. I go all over France with these magnificent machines to the most beautiful places. I cook for the most wonderful people. I'm at the top end of the food business, so my stuff is quite expensive. So I cook for the great winemakers of Bordeaux. I do the big wine tastings. I just 4 weeks ago, I did the welcoming of the Olympic Committee to Paris. They chose me out of all the French culinary stars to do this.
Oh, so Brian is becoming such a wonder, big thing there now.
Yeah.
Do you go around with those trucks, you know, like you see on TV, the smokers, or are you more into your brying?
I do. Look, what I really do is cook with fire. Right. The South African braai is really grilling. It's thin pieces of meat that we grill quickly.
Yes.
And we grew up with that. It's delicious. I love doing that.
Right.
I also use the offset barbecues. As some people call it smokers. You can do what you want with. You can cook really slowly or you can do it faster. Mm-hmm. I love it because I cook with a fire. Well, part of it is by fluke because when I want my first restaurant, I wanted open fires in France. 1 month before the opening, the pompiers, the firemen came to me and said, no. Please, no open fires in the south of France. You're going to burn us down. I say, man, I'm from South Africa. Jeez, it's a lot drier here. We know what we're doing with fires, but there was no... I had to build these closed barbecues. I had designed them. I had them built in Italy. And they came over, and that became, in fact, what is now the mainstay of my business. So I have these magnificent machines. I cook with them on the offset thing. I developed my own braai as well that we sold 30,000 in France already. And I'm planning to bring that to France. I'm looking for distributors now. In fact, that's why I'm going to Bloom to speak to people there.
Mm-hmm. Magnificent. Yes, coal, charcoal, wood.
No, always with, I would say, right. When I say always with wood, I prefer wood because I love to see a fire while I'm cooking. Even, and that's something with the South African braai that bothers me sometimes because a lot of people make the fire and then use the coals, and the fire is the nice thing. So my stuff always has, even if I'm cooking, there is a fire going somewhere. You know, and I use the heat of the side of the fire to cook stuff, and I grill stuff on the barbecue, on the grill. Right. So, no, I lost the trail of my story. I go around France with these machines,
right.
Doing the offset barbecuing and the grilling, and I do spits, and I dig holes in the ground and make fires. I love to make stuff. My cooking is not, it's not in the plate. You know, like, normally if you see a cooking show, it's like in the kitchen cooking, plate, and then the plate becomes beautiful.
Yeah.
My stuff is totally different. It's a spectacle. People arrive there, there's this... There's stuff going on, you know, with fire and iron and wood. I chop my own wood and huge pieces of meat. I do a lot of vegetables in the barbecue, big pumpkins, and it's gorgeous. So people arrive, they have the spectacle with me, of course. I open the barbecues. The mouths start watering. There's a primordial thing when people see that. They just love it.
Yeah.
And so by the time they eat, the game is totally won. You know, they are having a wonderful meal. Of course, I make stuff delicious. I should be able to do that by now.
Oh, I know there's some magnificent.
Which is the reason I did this book, you know, because there are a bunch of braai books in South Africa, but not one of them, I think, has been written by a professional. Everything has been written by, I don't know, like bloggers and food editors or like somebody that does a TV show, but I mean, I've cooked for hundreds of thousands of discerning French eaters.
Yes.
And I've made a huge success out of it. So I really know what I'm doing. So there is something in that book that is accessible. My attitude towards this is not really recipes. It's not 5 milliliter in a teaspoon. It's technique.
Yes.
So all the stuff there I think there's one thing with the sauce because I don't use sauce. I don't use maritade.
No.
Rubs I use, but mostly I use salt and pepper, fire and iron expertise, and time.
Right.
You know?
Now, talking about time, how long in advance do you actually have to start getting ready if you're doing this for thousands of people?
If I do, the biggest thing I've done was for 5,200 people, and we do that quite every 2 years. It's the big wine tasting of the Rhône Valley in the south of France.
Wow.
So we have these, they invite thousands of people from around the world to come and taste their wines, the buyers from, you know, the wine companies and restaurants from around the world. They invite it, and then I cook for them.
Wow.
Oh, there are other thing, people doing stuff too, but I do the main part of the meal in I do the main part of the meal in the barbecues. And they love it, and that's, we've been invited back year after year when this happens. For something like that, it's the first time I said yes to it, I thought that's completely impossible. Now, this is a very South African thing.
Yes.
We will tackle anything. It's not a very French thing. The French find, I love the French, but things are very easily impossible for them. But you know, the South Africans. Yes, we can do it.
Of course.
How are we going to do it? We have no idea, but we'll figure it out. So we ended up doing it, and it was wonderful. You don't sleep for a week. You work day and night to cook for that amount of people. The fires are going all the time. Then you have to move from town to town in between. So, but it's become something that is, and at the end you're completely exhausted and joyful. So it's become something that all the crew that works with me, they are fighting each other to come on this trip. So I normally take about 20 people with me for that. And we, you know, we have a circus driving down with a 4x4s pulling these huge barbecues. Then we live in the same place. We eat together. We wake up, you know, we almost don't sleep. And we have a magnificent time. And every time you cook for people like that, you know, you're standing there. You've cooked for, say there's like 3,000 people there that day.
Yes.
And there's like 500 of them that come past and say, it was wonderful. It was so good. Jesus, you're floating on a cloud. Yes. You know, that's really nice.
I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and I'm sharing recipes with you and chatting to chatting to Kobus Butcher now, who is the Brahman in Paris. I mean, an amazing story. And he left South Africa with the mother of his child, and they went to live in Paris. And it's just such an amazing story of how he took his skills of braaiing to Paris and what he has done, serving braai to thousands and thousands of people. Kobus actually comes from humble beginnings on a dusty small holding in the Klein Karoo. And by the time he was 37, he had lived his first life as a producer of numerous international movies and television series. And he then changed tack and he started anew in France, where he opened several restaurants, authored two successful cookbooks, now runs a renowned barbecuing business called Kobus Braai. Okay, so using his custom-made, I mean, he makes his own barbecues. He does massive, prestigious events like the Rhone Valley wine tasting for 5,000 guests. But we're going to talk to him more about that, and you're going to get little tips from him, some that I was quite amazed at. And as I always say, you know, you're never too old to learn. So I picked up quite a few tips from Kobus, and I hope that you enjoy the interview with him. And this is how it goes from when he arrived in Paris.
In South Africa, you know, a braai starts when, you know, you unpack the wood and you start, you know, defrosting the meat. And you break open the wine. It starts, it's a social gathering. It's a pleasure for everybody. And in France, it was more like coming to sit down for a meal. On the other hand, the French can spend hours around a meal, eating and talking, you know, and making stuff, like, you know, with the French food. Yes. So the thing that that took me some time to bring into the French, of what I do for the French, is that thing to enjoy the whole experience.
Just to relax and chill.
Yeah. And the whole, a huge part of the pleasure for human beings, it's like being next to the sea or the river or something. You're sitting next to flames, to a fire. That makes you feel good. We just made like that. And then to see the vegetables and the meat and the stuff, you know, getting more cooked and the beautiful colors and the smells and stuff that arrive. So what I do now, in fact, I don't do, once a week I do something that's open to the public next to the Seine River at a place that I know.
Yes.
But 99.9% of the stuff I do is private. So people book me and I come and do their stuff. Because it's a much better business. I'm not reliant on the weather and things like that. And I enjoy it more because it's normally, you know, all over the place. It reduces my risk. Yeah. However, next to the Seine there, the people also now they know. I am there from, you know, I start at 8:30 in the morning and we open at 1. Mm. The people start floating in the morning just to be around the bride to come and chat with
the
me.
Smell the aroma, yeah. Must draw them in.
And some of the people are like, you know, like really fans of Bri and fans of me. So they come to ask to help me to do some, you know, of the stuff with me. How do I do this? And I'm generous with my advice, you know, because I know that it's going to take them like 30 years to get to my level. So I'm not scared.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they love it, for sure they love it. Right. It's a certain kind of French person that like it. The biggest part of my clientele are what we call Bobos, the Bohemian bourgeoisie.
Okay.
So the bourgeoisie is like, you know, they will want to sit down and have little slices of something served in front of them. That's not for me. Yeah. People come to me when they eat and I cut the meat and discuss. It's a social thing, you know.
Right.
Not when we do 3,000 people, but, you know, most of the stuff I do is like 150 or so. And I do really small things, too. I do like for 10 people, but normally it's the heads of companies, you know, if they had the directorial meeting.
Right.
Instead of going to a 3-star Michelin restaurant, they get me to do this, and I spend an evening cooking and talking with them. And it's a hell of a lot more expensive than a 3-star Michelin restaurant. Also, it's an experience they won't forget. So that's a big pleasure, because then you speak to people on a very high level, you know, and they have interesting knowledge to share and they like my story. So it's a nice to and fro.
You know, that's something that I've noticed, because with my son being and my husband involved in the barbecue business and, you know, catering, all that kind of thing, I've noticed a lot of men are for their 50th birthdays, are now coming to the business, and my son or my husband's teaching them about brying and whatever, and that's their birthday party. 50 men get together, they have their brew, they have their beers and some wine, and they learn about brying and cooking, and they eat the meat that they cook. And it's terrific.
Mm, I've done a lot of that too, and it's a huge pleasure always, because it's, you know, people who want to learn that are normally interesting people.
Yeah.
And so they want to learn from you, and it's always really nice and exciting. In fact, Nike, one of the big sponsors of the soccer team, the French soccer team, they called me the Friday before the big game, the final. And they said, okay, if we win tomorrow, we want you to do, you know, but a simple like street food meal, for all the Nike people and of course the sport people, at the Nike head office. I think it was 200 or 300 people. So I made these, and if they win, we're not doing it. So it's a bit hard to
that's not fair.
But you know, I understand that. So I have to stay on my toes today. Of course, it's fun because it's more excitement. Is going to happen, not going to happen.
Adrenaline.
So that was, that was nice. And of course we won, and, I made this. And you know, it's so simple. It's just that. And people love it so much, but it is so good, because every piece of that very simple meal has taken a lot of preparation and knowledge and time and good ingredients. And finally, you have this simple essence of the best of something that can be without buggering around with sauces. And a sauce and a marinade to me is, if you don't know what you're doing, you throw a sauce on it and now it's okay because the sauce is nice. You know, of your marinade to me doesn't work at all, because meat is not a sponge. It doesn't suck stuff into it. You know, it's like meat doesn't work like that. So to me, a marinade is just a fallacy. So what I do is very simple. The smoke works on the thing. The heat works on it. You know, the time, the quality of the meat, the cut of the meat. That's the stuff that's important.
Right. Now, do you have a sauce on the side, maybe like a monkey gland? Have you introduced them to monkey gland?
Did you listen to me just before, what I think about sauces? Anybody even demands vaguely to have a sauce on this stuff, I insult them.
Okay.
But badly.
Have you introduced them to bourrevors?
I
know you do a skinless sort of sausage with coriander and that.
No, you know what I did? There's this, I forgot her name, a chef, a journalist from the Sunday Times came out like a few years ago.
Yes.
To when I still had the restaurant. And she came back and she wrote, to have the best boulevards, you know, I have to travel to Paris.
You know what I really love about this book? Is that, you know, we're only allowed to eat certain cuts of meat, okay? So everything from the fore quarter. And the thing that you say here is the prime rib is your best cut of beef. And that's what we eat. And you do this, well, you call it an entrecote steak, okay, which is your first rib on the bone.
That's the coup de bœuf, in fact. The,
yes.
The entrecote is without the bone.
Entrecote without the bone. Okay, so just tell me how you cook this beautiful, perfect prime rib. What you do.
Okay, let me tell you how I cook a steak.
Yes.
Because I, you know, everybody's so precise on that your steak has to be bleu, or, you know, it has to be medium rare.
Yes.
And you know, that people ring bells at your table if you want it well done. I like a steak that has got a piece on it that's crispy and well done, that's got a piece that's a bit succulent. I don't want a thicker piece that's too cooked because with the white, the meat becomes white inside. So the part that that must be overcooked and crispy is going to be really thin, and then it goes up and it becomes more, you know, it's got becomes more medium, and then it goes to medium rare. And then if it's the bone on it, next to the bone, I want a bit of, you know, like nice rare. So I cut my steak in wedges. I want all the ways of cooking in that thing, because I like every part of it. And if I have just a bleu steak, I'm annoyed because I feel like eating raw meat. If I have just medium rare, it's so, and the outside has to be almost burnt, not burnt, but it's got to be almost
caramelized.
Burnt.
Caramelized, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Caramelization.
And how you do that is the steak, you've got to start slowly. The steak's got to start really slowly, high above the fire.
Yes.
You're warming this thing up, because this the part that's rare, you yes. don't want to be cold. It's got to be hot and rare. And then when the thing is like the right temperature, you bring it down right next to the fire,
uh-huh.
and you grill. It's got to be a hot fire. Now you want sizzling and sputtling and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you take it off, and what do you do then?
Oh, I know. You're going to make sure that the fat around the meat, you sort of twirl it. What do you do? You circle it around the heat.
No, in fact.
So that you get all that beautiful fat.
I left that out because, in fact, what you should do right in the beginning is grill the fat until it's just crispy.
Oh, okay.
But I was thinking of a piece of meat without a big piece of fat on. That's why I left it out.
Okay.
The thing is, everybody's saying, and now you've got to rest something.
Oh, yes, of course.
What? I never rest anything.
You don't?
No. Because why do you want to rest it? It's now the perfect temperature is just the best thing. Any guy that's standing next to the braai will tell you that piece that he's stealing off there and eating is the best piece. Why? Because it's just coming straight from the grill. You let it stand there, it's sort of, either it's going to become colder. If you cover it with something, that crispiness goes away. The heat goes out of where it's supposed to be. The part that's dry becomes too dry. You take that steak off and you eat it right now in front of me.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I'm learning all these wonderful new things because, you know, as you said, like the rule is you've got to leave it for 10 minutes so that the juices...
No, who thinks of this stuff?
Now, if I wanted a dessert on the braai, okay, so when I were going the whole hog from beginning to start on a braai, and I was reading one of your recipes for grilled grapes. That I've never had. I've had vodka grapes, but not grilled grapes.
Now, it's obvious that a grape is made for the braai.
How?
It is the best things made for guys got a thick skin. Grapes have that. It's coming on its own container thing. All you have to do is you have to suspend it over the fire in some way. You know, you right. can either hang it next to the fire or something. What I sometimes do, I just put a little string, I hang it next to the fire, you wind up the string and you let it go and it winds back again, you know. Or you can grill it on a small grill. Look, what is a grape? What's the honeypot, for instance?
Yes.
Honeypot is a sweet grape that has been reduced by sunshine and by further fermentation to become something that's really sweet and with the essence of the grape. That you can do with any kind of a grape. It has to be a nice grape to begin with, and the bigger grapes are better than smaller grapes. Like the Italian-style grapes, you know, the big the big ones. When you cook the grape, the outside becomes nice and, you know, gets a bit of color, gets caramelized, becomes a bit frumpy, and the sugar becomes so intense in the grape that you have to break it with something. You have to put crème fraîche, or you have to put some vanilla ice cream or a bit of cream. You cannot just eat it like that. It's too sweet. Isn't that funny? But when you eat that with a mix of the crème fraîche, it is really delicious, and it's so simple. It's just
simple.
That. And then what you do, it's no trouble. You cut the little bits of, you know, grapes stalks, and you arrange it nicely with this, with the crème fraîche.
Beautiful. Really?
And then you take parsley, ordinary parsley, and you chop it finely.
Right.
And you throw it away because nothing should have parsley on it.
I was getting excited about it. Recipe like salsa verde or something. Throw it away.
Listen, I just want to mention something because I'm talking about a lot of the stuff that I do. That's not in the book.
Right.
If people want to see pictures of that, I've got a nice Instagram thing with all the big and
okay,
Facebook.
So how can people have a look at your stuff and contact you?
At the address for both Facebook and Instagram, at Kobus Braai. Kobus with a K.
Right.
Braai with a B.
Kobus Braai.
No, it's funny. The French spell Braai, B-R-A-I-I. Braai.
Braai.
Because, it's funny. It's quite nice though.
So
it comes from that. The Facebook is mainly in French, but that's, you know, while I'm doing the events, I do that. And the Instagram is more like night pictures I really like and what's happening, but I do that in mostly in English and a bit in French and Afrikaans.
Yeah. Well, this is amazing because, as Kobus said, he just let us into a couple of his secrets, but he's got, I mean, you have everything from the braai equipment you should be using, preparing the fire, choosing the ingredients, cooking methods, cooking on a stick, sausages, kebabs, you name it, it's there. Meat and poultry, fish and seafood, sides, vegetables, fruits, salads and rubs. What a book. You've got to go out and get it for your husbands and your wives, actually. Yes, because if they like me, then they love braaiing.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and we've been chatting to Kobus Braai. What a fun man that was. Now, I must admit, we had to cut out a couple of the swear words, didn't we? But, nevertheless, he was a very interesting interview with different ideas, and this is one of his rubs that he uses, as he says, for just about anything, every kind of food. You'll need 150 grams of coarse sea salt. You'll need lightly ground. You'll need 50 grams of light brown sugar, 30 grams of ground paprika, 3 tablespoons of ground black pepper, 1 tablespoon of garlic flakes, 1 tablespoon of onion flakes, and 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. And you just combine them, stick it in a jar and use it and rub it into your meat whenever you need it. So it's really quite an easy rub to do. The other rub that he talks about, which is actually delicious on lamb, is his ginger curry rub. So, yes, this also goes with everything, as he says, but you will need for this 300 grams of caster sugar, 4 teaspoons of coarse sea salt, which you see lightly ground as well, 2 tablespoons of ground turmeric, 1 teaspoon ground ginger, 1 teaspoon mild curry powder, 1 teaspoon fine white pepper, 1 teaspoon cayenne pepper, 1 teaspoon ground mace, 1 teaspoon ground allspice, 1 teaspoon ground coriander, 1 teaspoon dried rosemary. Crumble the dried rosemary, just crumble it a little bit in the palm of your hand even, and you just combine it all together, shake it up, and there is your ginger curry rub. Okay, so now there was, if I have time, I'm going to give you his burger recipe. But one recipe that I did enjoy was his spare rib recipe. And he's crazy about ribs. I mean, he'll tell you that. So as he says, I taste them any chance I can get, especially when I'm traveling. I love slow-cooked American ribs where the meat falls off the bones, or the way the Chinese prepare them. And, of course, bright South African spare ribs. I have some rubbed spices at the back, which I've given you some of the recipes for. You can use some other vinegary sauces if you want, but I prefer them with a slightly sweet sauce, like in this recipe. If you don't have time to prepare the sauce, use a store-bought yakitori sauce or similar, like a nice Chinese sauce. So for this recipe, you need 7 tablespoons of soy sauce, 100 grams of brown sugar, 4 tablespoons of the rice wine, or you can use white wine if you prefer to, or white wine vinegar. 1/2 teaspoon of onion powder, or you can use spring onion, you know, fine, very finely chopped if you want to. He does, you know, it always gives you options because he believes that cooking is through taste and through your own creativity. So you can use 1/2 spring onion finely chopped, or you can use 1/2 teaspoon onion powder, 1/2 tablespoon of lemon zest, or you can put a little bit more in if you want to, a few drops of Tabasco, and plus minus 1 kilo of steakhouse ribs, or you can use lamb ribs. Okay, you can use the large beef ribs or lamb ribs. Salt and pepper, and a little bit of ground pepper to taste. So to prepare enough hot coals to last, you've got to prepare coals to last for at least 30 minutes. Okay, now if you're using a gas braai, it's even better because then you can control the flame. And you combine the soy sauce, brown sugar, white onion, white wine vinegar or white wine, onion powder, lemon zest and Tabasco in a small pan. Reduce until the mixture becomes a little syrupy. And then you remove from the braai and you reserve it. So you actually cook it on the braai. You can cook it on your stove if you want to. He just does big braais and he's braaiing all the time. So he just uses it on the braai. Makes it on the braai. And now, if necessary, prepare the ribs by removing the fine membrane on the bone side at the back. Okay. He finds that they're more pleasant to eat if you just pull that piece of fiber away, that skin on the end of the rack. And then you rub the rack well with salt and pepper. And if necessary, cut it into pieces to fit on the braai. Place the ribs on the grid and you cook it, turning regularly until they're nice and brown. You cook the thickest pieces on all sides and then you lean them up against one another. Okay, if the meat doesn't stand up on its own, then you sort of push them together so that the thicker part really gets cooked. And then when the ribs are almost cooked, he says after about 20 minutes, I tend to go a little bit longer, but if you don't want them so well done, then, you know, don't carry on cooking them. But I must actually say that I braaied mine first and then I did put them into the oven to cook a little bit longer. Be careful with the, when you're cooking the sauce because it can burn quickly, you know, because of the sugar and whatever. And then you just paint it after you've braaied it. You just paint it with the sauce. And that's it. Now, if you want to, you can stick it into the oven, as I said, as I did. Or, he'll probably kill me for this, but you can boil them in a little bit of Coke beforehand and then braai them and they're still just as delicious. So, that is it, our Kobus Butter's Le Braai with a bit of Je ne sais quoi. And I hope you've enjoyed the show. Get ready for Thursday night, because I hope to see everybody at the Challah Bake. And we'll see you. It starts 5:30. And get your hands strong and get those muscles moving, because we're about to need. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. It's the Eat and Meet that makes the show complete. And see you in 2 weeks' time.